Education Work Session. Today is January 23rd, 2024. The time is 5:30. Jamie, could we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Heck.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Van Wassenova.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Here. Could we stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Mr. Shaw, I will turn it over to you.
Well, thank you. Well, good evening, everybody. Hopefully, actually, we'll be at our next workshop. We'll be back in the front room. If you walk by, you'll see a hole in the floor, trying to make it so it's not, there's no hazards in there anymore, and just doing a little work. So on our agenda tonight, we're going to first pop into board policies. And these were the policies that we had brought to you and for discussion at our last workshop. And tonight we have Jeremy with us from Collins of Blaha to help walk us through any particular questions you had. I've prepped him on some of the things that you had shared. And so if you don't mind, if you go back into your board, in the board meeting section, you'll find those bylaws right there. You're trying to preserve a couple of trees. So when we look at the bylaw section right there, for which was policy 0122, and that had to do with just board powers, many items were struck out. And so we went through and talked about, these are all struck out due to the law changes. And so that was why we're seeing those things happen right there. Oddly enough, in this policy, there was no he's or she's or them's in changing. And so with that right there, Jeremy, you want to help everyone understand what happened right here, why, like, in this section there on the bylaw, sure, this all struck out?
Real briefly, in the last legislative session of the Michigan legislature, which ended at the end of last year, a little bit earlier than normal, the MEA had lobbied hard to change the law in a way that was going to be more favorable to teachers generally, educators in general, and they succeeded on most of their goals. The one piece that was not changed was the Tenure Act itself in terms of the standard for discharge of a teacher, but a lot of Michigan's public labor law, through joint lobbying between the MEA and then other associations and unions across the state, was significantly changed, and that's most dramatically reflected in this first policy here under the board powers. Each of those items that's been struck out has since 2011. It was passed in 2010, but didn't take effect until 2011. So since 2011, each of those pieces has been a prohibited topic of bargaining, which means that it's been illegal for the district and any of its employee unions to bargain over those topics. So for example, the content of what your evaluation system has been, it's been illegal to bargain about that. Teacher discipline, illegal to bargain that. Placement of teachers, illegal to bargain that. And so that was reflected in your NEOLA updates in 2011, because that's what the law said in 2011. They said you're not allowed to bargain over this anymore. And so what was now struck out was put into these policies to reflect the then current state of the law. February 13th, which is why this is timely, February 13th is 90 days after the last day of the closure of the last legislative session. Because, and not to get way off in the weeds on legislative processes, but because the House and the Senate are controlled by the Democratic Party, but only by narrow margins at this point in time, there were not sufficient votes to make any of these changes in the law have immediate effect. Otherwise, they would have taken effect once they were passed. So they take effect after the 90 days after the expiration of the legislative session, which is February 13th. Which means NEOLA's given you these in time that you can update your policies to reflect what the law will be on February 13th if you take action on them tonight. And I think a second reading is normal as well before the 13th. So this policy in particular is statutorily just reflects the changes to PARA, the Public Employment Relations Act, in this policy.
Are there any questions on that you know, these reflect that?
The X.
X.
X. Can you give me a little insight what they're talking about there?
So decisions about the development format, content, and procedures of the notification to parents and legal guardians required under MCL 380-1249A. So that requirement was put into place in 2015. It was that made the major changes to PARA and a lot of this other education law in 2010, 2011. Then there's another round of tweaking it in 2015. In 2015, they passed a law that said if your teacher was rated poorly, I'm paraphrasing, but if you had the lower ratings for the teacher. And the reason I'm using general language now is we're in this transition phase where they're moving from one set of language descriptors to another. But if you had the bad rating as a teacher multiple times, the district was and your teacher student was going to be back in that classroom again, then the district had a legal obligation to notify the parents in writing that you had that bad rating multiple times and your kid was in that classroom anyway. That was the law for the last 8 years, basically. And that was deleted as well. That's no longer part of the law. So I believe that's why Neola took that one out as well.
So no notification is made regarding any type of...
It's not prohibited, but it's not required anymore.
Okay.
So for the last 8 years, it's been an obligation that... And so what the practical effect of that is that building principals would make sure that nobody got stuck in the same classroom over and over again. You'd move people around to avoid sending that letter. Nobody wants to send that letter. Nobody wants to get that letter. And so that was the practical effect. I don't think most of my clients were sending those letters out because they would take the necessary steps to move people to avoid sending those letters. But that was stricken from the law in the end of November and taking effect again on February 13th.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're always a wealth of knowledge.
He truly is.
Literally my job. I have to know this stuff.
Oh, you do. Yeah.
So 1420, which is administrator evaluation, as we shared too, even the teacher evaluation right there. So if we dive into here, it starts to pull into going from 40% to 20% with specific dates. Jeremy, when you and I talked on this one and even on the other evaluation, why is it important for us to look at making this acceptance right here and moving forward with this policy in particular and the other evaluation one? I remember when we talked about it, we always want to create the highest standard. Mm-hmm. If nothing changes in contractual law, in our contracts.
Right. So two-part.
Go ahead. You understood it. I'll listen.
No, that's okay. Yep. I'm here to be a resource, not to talk over anybody. Two different parts of the law were changed as it relates to evaluations. That was included in the removing prohibited subjects from PARA, from Public Employment Relations Act. So that was one side of the coin. Is that currently, until February 13th, it's illegal to bargain about the content of evaluation system. On February 13th, that will no longer be a prohibited topic of bargaining, which means technically your local local unit or the MEA could file a petition, a demand to bargain, and say we want to demand to bargain what the evaluation system is going to look like within specific parameters. The other side of the coin is in the revised school code, separate section of the law from PARA. In the revised school code, there were fairly detailed parameters on exactly what the evaluation system had to contain in terms of the percentage of student growth that was going to be utilized and how often you were doing this, et cetera, et cetera. There's a bunch of parameters. And some of those were shifted, as Andy mentioned, going from 40% of the evaluation being student data, now it's 20%. The brand new set of categories of descriptors. So we've had four from highly effective all the way through ineffective. And now we're going to have three starting on July 1st. And so while the new terms don't come into effect until July 1st, the law was written, and it's reflected in this policy, to say that up until July 1st, we're doing it this way, and then on July 1st, we're going to adopt the new package because that's when the law changes. It's a good idea to do it now because you have to get all of that in place before July. I wouldn't want you to wait until July to pass that, and you'd be behind the eight ball at that point in time. Which is why I think Neil provided it to you now.
The one other question that came out of this also had to do with, and Larry, I think you had it, had to do with only being able to evaluate an administrator one time a year, or and at the end of the year, I think it was.
I think one of my questions was that when we do evaluations, we use your tool, Jeremy.
For the superintendent, Mueller?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. And is there anything that says we can't use factor A, for example, and score that at 30% and score factor 7 at 10%? percent, or do we have to equally evaluate?
So that part of the law didn't actually change. So, so the answer is no, but it's because the law doesn't specify percentages for weighting within the term. The law says that you have to have an approved tool, a modified tool, or a locally developed tool. This is a locally developed tool. If you're using a locally developed tool, actually, if you're using any of these tools, then the quote-unquote primary author of the tool, which in this case is Gary Collins, is the one that signs it, has to certify what is correct, the correct way, and it has to be provided with the research base that leads to that. So our tool is provided with equal weighted categories. That's the way that it was structured. If you look at a different one, like MASB values board participation at, I think, 25% of what they value community relations at. I mean, there's different ways, but that they certified that. They said, we think board interaction is here and community's up here and student growth is whatever. It comes weighted the way, and if they sign off on it, then the only way to change that and still be legally compliant would be for them to ask them, can you research support a modification and sign off on that? Same thing with this. If you want to move off the weighted system, the equally weighted system, it'd be a phone call to Gary and say, do you have research that would support changing the way that you certified this to us? Because right now, there's a letter on your website that Gary signed that says, I certify that the research validates this model. And so to change, I mean, that's a short answer. Is to change that, you'd have to have a conversation with Gary about whether he thought you could validate that.
How soon would we have to have a conversation with Gary before he would?
I don't know that he would anyway. I haven't broached it with him. It's the first time anybody's asked, actually. So I don't know what the answer would be. It's not one that I have in my back pocket on that. It would be a new conversation. So.
But question, if I understood you previously, is that the union can, if they don't like the system that we're using for the administrators, they can bargain to use something differently?
So a slightly different question from Mr. Van Wachanova's, just because our tool is for the superintendent, and that's the only evaluation the board performs, right. And so that's it's a special tool for that purpose. Your teachers and other administrators have other tools that are utilized for their evaluations. Until now, they were not by law allowed to have anything to say about it. The board picked it unilaterally. As of February 13th, they will be allowed to demand to bargain. What that means is that you don't automatically have to do something differently than you're doing now. And in fact, the labor law is that the status quo prevails until you reach a new contract. But if a demand to bargain that topic were made, and there's a form that's filled out, submitted to the state and to Cindy, if a demand to bargain were made and you sat down and you bargained and you said, in exchange for whatever, we will give you the tool of your choice, something like that, then yes, they would be allowed to change the tool that's used in that process. But it's not something that you automatically have to do differently now. It's just they're allowed to ask to bargain it now. Okay. But Andy never got to bargain it anyway. I mean, that's just para applies to unions.
So that question just went out of my head, so we'll move on from that. My other one is, so when this policy, because obviously there's a lot of this until this, until this, until this, is there a plan then to come back and say, we're going to revise this policy after these dates, or are we going to leave the language as it currently is?
So once kind of the anticipatory dates that are in here are in the rearview mirror, I would expect, because it's normal for Neola to do this, that they would come back through and just like strike out the old ones, because you're living in new world at that point
That's
in time.
What I think.
I would expect them to do that, and if they didn't automatically, I'd suggest that we do a cleanup on it or something like that. Again, I didn't ask them why they sent it now, but I would surmise the reason they sent it now rather than waiting until July is so that you can have it in place as you're getting ready to bargain. It's normal bargaining season starting in February and March, just across the board. That's when people start talking about, are we going to bargain? There's been no demand about any of this. There shouldn't be. It's not February 13th yet. So it's not like we're reacting to something, but I think Neola understands the dynamic there and said, well, we'll put in a policy that covers you through June 30th and July 1st so that everybody knows where we're at and we're legally compliant. I mean, there are suggestions in here. I mean, I did review, not just for Monroe. I mean, 90% of our clients use Neola policy. So I've looked at these several times. They made changes to reflect the new statutory standard. That's it. They have not altered the scheme of balancing special strategies or anything like that. They basically said the law changes on this date and it's going to cut and paste job. But it's good to have your policies reflect current law. So, and that's what it is.
So that now I've got two things.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one I remembered, when there is a demand from the union for a contract, does the system, the school, are they required to open and negotiate?
That's a great question. So normally, no. We say we talk about a contract being closed when you're in the life of the contract. It says it starts on this date and it ends on this date. It's right on the cover page of the contract. It's stamped on there. So a contract is closed. And during that time period, normally, unless you've got language in there that says we can reopen it, we call it a reopener. So if you don't have that, we say it's a closed contract. We're not bargaining it until the next bargaining cycle. So, you know, 6 months before it expires, basically, is kind of the normal when you start talking about bargaining a new contract. The reason that this is a little bit different and why we might have to bargain this earlier is because it was illegal to have language on these topics in the contract right now. And there's case law that's evolved over public labor law in Michigan that has said if you have a bargain on a topic, you do not have to grant a request to bargain. So on wages, for example, if you don't write a wage reopener, that's why a wage reopener is a big deal if you put it in there or not, because if you don't have a wage reopener, then once you agree to those wages, the union's not allowed to come and we're not allowed to come. Conversely, neither party can come and say we want to change the wages. No, that contract is what it is. We don't have a bargain on evaluation, placement, discipline, etc., because it's been illegal to have a bargain. It was not allowed to be in the contract. And in that circumstance, because there is no language in the contract, they are allowed to ask on those topics only. So you can't come in and say we want to talk about other things we have language on. No, that's an unfair labor practice to demand to bargain something we have a settled contract on. But where a topic, placement, et cetera, evaluation, the new para changes, that we don't have contract language, they are allowed to ask to bargain. And again, we don't have to do a specific response to that in terms of granting or X number of proposals. What we have to do is engage in good faith. That's the responses. So if
so
they
you're not required.
You're not required to make
open, but you have to look at all of the parameters and to decide whether it would make sense. Because typical, this is what my world of uh-huh. contracts are. You don't open a contract prematurely because once it's opened, unless there's some agreement, the whole thing's open and everything can be up for discussion. Yeah.
Totally
and that's
understand.
Not a good thing.
Yeah, no, I totally appreciate that dynamic is when we start talking, and that's something that your team here understands and has to be careful with coming back to you if there's a demand made. I think the next move will be to say, to respond, yes, we will respond in good faith. You know, there's a form that we fill out and say we'll engage in good faith bargaining that doesn't oblige you to any specific number of meetings or any specific proposals, and then we come back to the board and say, in the realm of what they're asking for, and this the fact that we have these other things we're not bargaining over right now, we have a closed contract, what would you like us to do with that? And have those, but that's a closed session conversation. So so we don't have an obligation to toss back any specific, if you ask for five, we give you two, not like that. What our obligation is to, if they say we want to bargain these topics that are not in the contract currently, we have to say we will do so in good faith. We have to agree, which generally means you agree you're gonna come to the table within a reasonable amount of time. A month to 2 months is usually reasonable to begin, and that you'll sit down a reasonable number of times to try to bargain over things like that. So,
because that topic came up during the last session,
right.
That's why I was kind of looking for that. My other thing is, as we're going through these, if there's anything in here that is not changed just strictly because of law change, mm-hmm. you'll know, let us know, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I go with Jeremy says, yeah. Let's go. You know,
yep.
It's law. But if there's anything, changes that were made that were not made just for legal reasons.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
I understand the question.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
So we go to policy 30.
I have a question in regards to.
Go ahead.
No, you're fine.
Like it says, you know, you have to give 40% or 20%, whatever that score is, depending upon the.
After July 1st, yep.
It says based upon any evaluation, must be based upon student growth and assessment data. Or student learning objective metrics. What does that mean?
So we're looking at, on the front page under C, the last line there?
Yeah.
In 2425, the annual evaluation must include the student growth and assessment data or student learning objective metrics, and 20% of the annual evaluation must be based on student growth and assessment data or student learning objective metrics. So that's a generalization compared to the current state of the law, the new language that's highlighted in yellow. Right now, it's 40% of any educator's evaluation is student growth data, and then it's specified in the school code now what certain components of that have to be. It says, for example, on your core subjects, ELA, math, etc., 50% has to be on a statewide assessment, and then the rest can be a local assessment. They make it more generic so that it's not as strict what counts as a student growth. The district basically has more freedom at this point in time to determine what's going to count towards that. Once, not today, on July 1st, the district will have more freedom to include. You're no longer going to be constrained to just 50% is MSTEP, et cetera, and then the other 50%, you just have to say, we certify this is how we're measuring student growth.
So you can create your own assessment to assess yourself and utilize that for the purpose of this policy.
The district can.
The district can, yeah.
And we have.
Yep.
No, he just said the 50% change is no longer going to be what it was. So.
Right, we will set the criteria of what that student growth is.
You could totally, based on that, discount the entire MSTEP process or weight that at 10% and use internal district assessments. That's what I heard.
I would imagine that we'll probably see across the state a much broader mix of assessments used in different places. I think different districts will have different solutions on that one. I would anticipate, because the new law doesn't channel you in a completely different direction. It doesn't go from 50% this to 75 to 25. It just kind of takes that out and says you must use assessments to measure. And so that's broad in terms of what that would look like.
That's my point.
Yeah, and so it doesn't demand that the district do some different process necessarily. If you were going to continue with the same blend you have now, that would be compliant with the law. But if you wanted to try some different blend for a reason, you would be allowed to.
And what I meant earlier was by, and we did, is that Monroe Public Schools already has our own local assessments created and implemented in place. Not meaning that we've already implemented, we're already doing these percentages and that's what we're doing. No. Like, we use those homemade, if you will, assessments. And like, as an example, the music department made our own common assessments that we use K-12, and that is what student growth data is used for the music department. We also have homemade assessments for all other content areas that contribute to the growth factor that is then contributing to the teacher's evaluation at the end of the year.
And those factors are negotiated with the teachers?
They could be. They're no longer prohibited from negotiating, is the way I would say it. So.
So you set your own standards, you set your own goals, and you evaluate yourself. Okay. It says we can do either one. Now, can we, as a board, say we're going to take one of this thing and the thing that's going to be MSTEP?
So the district can still set what you're going to use as how you measure student growth. And that's not different from today. All that's different is that constraint on a specific portion has been lifted.
What we have to actually do is balance it, because you think about
it. Well, I mean, that's an example.
So right. An elementary principal, MSTEP sits there for them. High school does it.
I guess what I'm getting at, maybe we're going to have to talk about that in, I don't know.
I would anticipate.
Procedure or maybe something even more.
Well, and here's the other where we're going to see variation is, I talk about VMEA as it is a statewide organization. They have their own priorities, and it's no secret. I'm not talking badly about anybody. I'm just, when I say the MEA got this passed, that's just an objective fact. Like, that's just what happened. I wasn't disparaging anybody with that. That just is what it is.
Right.
I mean, so, but what I was going to say is every local district's local association is local people, or your people in Monroe, and Bedford's people, and Ida's people, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so, I don't know, and I wouldn't care to guess, and in fact, if I was guessing, I'd do it in closed session, you know, what your local unit's going to say as a priority for them. I would say wait and see. In terms of getting to integrating policy and contract, I think is where you're going, Larry, on that one, because you're right, if they're allowed to bargain, we may, as a board, you as a board, may say, we want to give something there to get something somewhere else or something like that. Well, that, if that's the case, if that's the bargain, our policy is going to have to reflect that as well. But right now, I'd say this is a good placeholder. It just says on, it aligns with the statutory language on the different dates. And then if we get a demand to bargain, evaluation, placement, whatever the case might be, we'll be having closed sessions to talk about what the board wants to do with that. And then if we have to modify policy in 9 months to update because we reached a new bargain, that all makes sense at that point.
So currently we have local, how do we, I mean, I know we have local assessments, but is that what we, sorry.
I listened to the recording the other day, and most of the people you can't hear.
We don't record these, they would be at the.
We're such soft-spoken people is a problem.
Hang a microphone.
But anyway, so currently, what, do we have a mixture or formula or something that we normally use now?
You want to go ahead and answer that, what we're doing right there, particularly with administrators?
We do use AMSTEP as part of it, but we also use the data from our essential outcome testings after units.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we use, and then iReady. I mean, we've got so many things in place at this point in time that you get a true read of everything of what our kids can do. If we took the AMSTEP out, we would be much more stellar in our. But we have things already there. You know, iReady is a big one. The elementaries are now using that. So we've all shifted gears to show what that 40% is going to look like.
And I didn't mean to take you off of your policy revisions here. Sorry. So
would you say, Andrea, you're the expert, you're the person that pulls all of it. Would you add anything more to that?
Can we get a copy of that scoring once you make the
Yeah, we wouldn't have what this year's growth is until the end of the year.
Well, could you get us like last year's scoring?
Like
just so we can get an idea of how that works. And maybe if you got a couple
and that's
years.
Just one piece of those common
how
right.
do you determine what piece to use and what piece not to use and how much is to give weight to this factor as opposed to that factor?
I don't do their evaluations, but
right.
Okay.
That is what it's, if you look at all the assessments that we give, I'm just there.
How could we find out? I guess I just like to know how we could determine on these assessments.
If you remember right now, their assessments is based 50% of that 40% on MSTEP.
Yeah. MSTEP is the
so that's
right now.
For right now.
Booger.
Right. So,
in lack of a better way of saying
it.
The other 50% is the local assessment. It could be iReady. It could be common assessments.
Literally.
It is.
That's what I want to find out. I mean, it could be this, could be that. But, I mean.
No, it is.
Is it, number one, is it uniform? What weight is given to what factors, et cetera? Is it, well, like,
so
figure out. It is the same as Manor as it is in Brazenville. Is the same as Waterloo.
The other 60?
So, your elementaries, so 40, with having in the iReady there, that'd be a key component.
When you say key component, what does that mean?
40. Well, I'm going to get there for you.
Oh, okay. Good.
60% is.
When you're talking about math and language arts,
right.
For an elementary teacher, that's all of them. But you get into her classroom, she teaches music.
Right.
She's not getting an iReady, so that she has to take whatever that building gets for MSTEP.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to self create. So you take and you roll up into the high school level. Or at any or middle school level too, where they don't have a state assessment being provided, they have to self-create an assessment. It could be a pre-post test method, or have specific benchmarks they want to have assessed, and that's what gets used.
Well, and the other piece of it is the Danielson model is the other piece, the other portion of what the evaluation process looks like. So, if 40% is MSTEP. you've got 60% on the other side of it, really, that looks like Danielson, which is by domain.
I guess what I'd like to say is somebody can share with us, you know, that information of how people are determined to be effective or what or not, you know, to comply with this. That would be really helpful.
We'll actually put that on a I know Jamie keeps notes as far as future workshops,
right.
And well, so that will be on one.
Right, the other thing,
what kind of
the other thing that I think
workshop or workshop in?
No, it'll probably have to be a special one because that's going to kill a couple hours.
Okay,
we're going. The other thing I was going to say about Danielson is maybe it would help for you guys to see what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes,
because you know it has five domains.
Yep.
And it really is pretty interesting. Maybe we could add that to the workshop.
No, that's what we need to show them how we conduct our evaluations.
Right, and with the new NEOLA policy, we have to have all administrators trained by September 1st. So this is going to be a really big deal for us to get, and then we need to train the trainer that's here that's local with us. So that's going to come in front of you too. So it kind of with this, with the revision, it brings up some new pieces to the evaluation process.
Great.
On this regard, because it fits in with the topics that I know that I've brought up several times, was what are the programs being used? I know we asked that several
and
times.
So
it's been months.
No, Terry, and I know she can't be here tonight. She's been dealing with jury duty, and then so she's been attending some other things. But I know that she did provide that in a board brief. Programs that we're doing.
All the programs that we're using?
Yeah, like if you're talking about like computer programs and or intervention programs?
No, that's no. The
if you're talking about the evaluation tools,
not to try and talk over you. No, not talking about that. I'm talking about when we start talking about the iReadies and the Clevers or whatever all those things are, we talk about So this is what I look at the sheet and I go, okay, give me all those and say, these are all the programs that we use because I know you use a lot of data driven from programming because it's a good way to get data. So what are the programs that you're using? And then at the bottom or somewhere on your graph say, these are the programs that we're using because I find it hard to believe in 2023 or whatever year we're in, 24, that there are not assessment tools out there for everything, including a music department, that we wouldn't need to create a self-assessed one.
Oh, wait, no. This is where I'm going to interject.
No.
You can.
So when it comes to the liberal arts, the fine arts, the performing arts, we should never create a boxed assessment system for them because their core function is based in creativity. So the K-12 music department, and I know the K-12 art department because I was involved with them for a year, our core function was to create a project-based curriculum and a project-based evaluation system for our students for them to demonstrate their learning through benchmarking so that they can show us growth in real musical skills, in real foundational art skills, but it allows us to choose different literature, to choose different artists, to choose different genres, to choose different styles, to have maximum opportunity to change what we're teaching, but still allow students to demonstrate growth. That's why in the fine and performing arts, we don't have a curriculum that's here's your assessment program. Because it's not a matter of here's your multiplication facts, show us you know your multiplication facts. Because in order to teach my students music education, it's more than read this rhythm on a page. I need them to understand how to feel, love, live, play, and be a musician. And in order to do that, there is no, like, write it on the page, beep, boop, bop, boop, done. So that's why you can find assessment programs out there, but it's not going to be what you're thinking it is.
So if we take the liberal arts out of it on the information I'm requesting, there should be all this other stuff that they're using in order to get to the end result. Because we can't just randomly say, I have made the determination that you've grown without an assessment to show that a student's grown in their reading.
Well, in a few minutes, we're going to show you that, and that's what the iReady does.
Well, yeah, but it's a tool where they go in and they do the work, and when they get the work done, the computer generates a pass or failing generates.
No,
and
it's
then
a
progresses.
So iReady is two formats. One format A is that it's mirrored to that of like the MSAP, so it's an assessment. It gives us a baseline of what the child knows, does not know.
Right.
Then there's a tool that's applied. Then the iReady also has then an adaptive tool, so that kids then can prescribe then the skill sets that child is weak in. So that is a very clear-cut assessment. We also have our own local assessments that the teachers use through their reading. But it's a Benmarks
assessment.
So
that's the kind of information that I've been asking for, because if you provide that, I don't have to sit there and ask you 50 questions on those kind of things. I just think information that's necessary for when these things come up are beneficial.
I've got that on my note right here of the scale of what you're looking for. And so I'll get that put together, and it won't be in this board brief because Terry's in court.
Yeah.
So
there's probably it's board time now.
I don't know there.
So
if we can keep going on to this next one, the 3120 employment of professional staff. All that was is they changed it from over to member rather than she or he.
Yep.
So that was nominal changes.
Same thing for the next.
In regards to the next policy, which is policy 3130, and that has to do assignment and transfer, the superintendent, so they just took out the he, she on that one. Staff recall, reduction and recalls. Jeremy, there was a lot that happened inside of this one. Why is this when we really start getting in here, this is a critical one for school districts, I believe.
Yep. So this is another one that had two sides of the coin, so to speak, two different parts of the law impacted on reductions and recalls, both para and then the revised school code again, just like with the evaluations. Under para, it was again stricken as a prohibited topic. So for the last, since 2011, it's been illegal for the teachers to ask to bargain about how a recall would be conducted. Not to get way off on the weeds on labor history, but that was a huge change in 2011, because as labor law evolved in America and within Michigan as well, the right to bargain over how a layoff would be conducted was fairly clearly kind of cemented with National Labor Relations Board decisions. And everybody kind of understood that with rare circumstances, seniority was kind of what prevailed. And so when Michigan changed the law, it was in 2011, it was a big change. And so Para said it was a prohibited topic of bargaining. And then getting to the second side of the coin, the revised school code was changed to say that rather than seniority, that seniority would only be allowed to be considered as a tiebreaker when, quote unquote, all else is equal, all other factors are equal, is the direct quote, when all other factors are equal. That's the current law until February 14th. I say 13th or 14th because the 13th is the last day of the current law, and at midnight on the 14th, we roll over into the new law. So when they changed the law at the end of the last legislative session, they took out the prohibition on bargaining. So now it's a subject of bargaining or will become February 14th. And they changed the law not to do away with the idea that layoff and recall would both be done according to a performance, that general idea is still within the revised school code. But they changed some of the particulars. So, for example, the language, and this is the NEOLA update reflects the statutory language. They basically cut and paste the statutory language. But they took out the phrase that said that seniority or length in a position, time in a position, may only be considered when, quote unquote, all other factors are equal, to say that it may be a factor. So, and that leaves it open for discussion. How much of a factor? What other factors? And then they listed other things that have to be a factor to make sure we didn't just go automatically back to seniority. So that's why there's the A through H. That's statutory language that Neola copied and put into here. So the legislature, as part of their compromise, said, we're going to allow teachers to bargain how it's done, and we're going to lessen this prohibition on using seniority, because everybody understands that the MEA would like to move back towards a more seniority-based system. So they put in this other list that said, you may consider seniority, time in a position, but you also have to make sure you consider all of these other things, teacher's attendance record, the record of managing a classroom, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to bargain if it's demanded to bargain, and we have to consider all of these things, but everybody kind of expects that seniority will become more important than it's been since 2011, is how everybody's been looking at it. But I've checked the language here, and this is another cut and paste. I mean, they have not added any kind of sneaky strategy package in here. This just reflects the updated statutory language.
Thank you. Any questions on reduction or recall? 3139, staff discipline, all he did is add the word and then took out she, he, his, her, and added the teachers. Policy 3140, termination and resignation, again, took out his, her, and added in the staff member.
We're going to date these 24.
When you adopt them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they put the 23 because they sent it in December. Okay. So. Yeah.
But they'll update all the
Yeah.
I only saw that one.
It gets updated based on the date that
you adopt it. The Neola updates board docs. Yep.
Probationary teachers. Jeremy, on this one right here, we had a considerable amount of conversation on this one, especially in the beginning of July 1st, 2024. If a teacher has been rated as effective or on July 1, on or after July 1, 2024, or highly effective before July 1, 2024, on three consecutive year-end performance evaluations. You and I talked at length on that one right there, and so of how that can work out.
Yeah, so the key change here is acknowledging that the highest rating category is going to get a new name on July 1st. So the current law says that if you complete 3 years highly successfully, it's great all around. You can have a shorter probationary period. You can move to an every other year evaluation at the board's preference, but the board's allowed to say we're only evaluating every other year if you get those three highly effectives in a row. So that's that concept is in the law already. And didn't change with the new law. What changed is the fact that the highest rating category is going to be different. So as of today, effective is the second highest rating category. As of July 1st, effective is the highest rating category because they're doing away with the term highly effective. They're keeping effective and just bumping it up a rank. And then you're going to have the middle category and the lowest category are going to have new names and dropping a fourth category in the meantime.
So when we got in the discussion on this one, it had to do around, could a teacher receive tenure after 4 years? And we have no teachers that had been highly effective in their first 2 years, so it's impossible. So it's going to take all 5 years mm-hmm. for them to receive, because they will not have had highly effective for three consecutive years.
And that reflects, I think that's a great practice, that reflects practice across the state, that it's difficult to get the highest rating category in your very first year teaching because you're brand new. And so when you're competing, you are competing essentially, but again, against teachers that have been doing this for a long time, when you think about it, that's not an anti-new teacher bias or something like that. You would expect that somebody brand new is probably going to have a harder time getting to the very highest category. But if they don't get it in their first year, then there's no way to get done early.
Yep.
I think, Tom, you had a question on regards to that, did you? Regards to fourth year?
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about.
Well, I guess here's the thing. I mean, granted, maybe it's hard to get highly effective the first year. Let's say we have a super teacher comes out. First 3 years, super. Does nothing wrong.
Okay.
Fourth year has a stroke and can't speak.
My God. Oh, what a rough year.
It's a rough year. After 3 years.
They're going to be in a whole different world than a bad evaluation, because we're going to have ADA protections.
Well, successful
and
completed probation.
Programs. We're going to be.
Yeah. Take another trauma. In the
well, whatever. But I mean, they're considered to have successfully completed probation, right? So there's nothing we can do about it.
But that's statutory. That is what it is. Like, Yep.
We want to make sure we understand that.
So they could have a bad, I think with Tom, if I remember what you said, they could have a great three first years.
Yeah.
and have a bad fourth year and still get tenure because they've had three within the four, and the four, which is your final, is irrelevant at that point.
But that's why we're sharing that. Yeah. None of our teachers, all of our teachers in our school district are on a path for, it'll take 5 years to get through tenure. There's none that have been highly effective three consecutive years at this point.
Yeah, but we're just talking about a policy change because the categories are going to change. So once those categories change, you have a higher probability that you're going to have teachers that are considered effective in their first 3 years.
But statutorily, we can't do anything about that. What we're saying at this very point in time, that there is no teacher in our system going to be able to receive tenure within 4 years.
Can he bargain on that issue?
But not after this, they could, right?
No, this isn't one of the prohibited topics. This is a change to the Tenure Act. So,
but after this, they could get tenure.
What they can bargain is different aspects of the implementation of the evaluation process. But the language on three of, and I'm trying to make it generic so that it makes sense because there's that change of language in the middle, three of the highest rating categories is already in the law, and they didn't change that. They just changed the label. They just went from highly effective to the new. The new effective is today's highly effective, you know? Which I wish they would have just scrapped the labels entirely and come up with different ones so that it would be easier to talk about instead of keeping one and bumping it. But that's neither here nor there. The law is what it is. And so if you get three of the highest category at whatever point in time you're at, today it's highly effective, after July it's effective, that's what the law says it is. If you get that, it is what it is. So
let's interpret it this way now. So we know that no current employee, all in five, using Larry's example, we hire a teacher this coming school year. Starts September of 24. So it's after everything's changed. And how does this get interpreted at that point in time? Because the way I'm reading it here is has completed 4 years. They're gonna, obviously, you're either effective or you're going to be less than effective.
Or less than effective, yes.
Okay. So, you know, at that point in time, if the way we're reading this, if they get three effectives, then after 24?
So after
so we hire a brand new person this
brand new person and they're under the new system
underneath the new system,
and we assume that
we know all of our current
this doesn't all change in a year, which is also a real possibility, not to muddy the waters, but you know, I was gonna say the legislature is up again and it's entirely possible this will all flip again, but I don't want to we're going to deal with what it is right now. So as of today, let's assume that nothing changes in the law for the next year, at least. That's a reasonable answer. Yes. Even if the legislature changes, we won't have changes to the law for basically a year from now. In that case, you hire somebody brand new, and what's the hypothetical, Andy? They get effective
for 3 years.
For 3 years, if they get effective 3 years in a row,
yep,
they get the shorter probationary period.
Which is 4 years, not
4 years
instead of five.
Which used to be the standard long time ago. The other question becomes is, and this is what we're there'll be a lot of trainings for us to understand it. We've lived in the world of four levels, and if you moved out of anything less than effective, it was not a good situation. Right. Well, we haven't been told anything less than effective, what that means.
Yeah. Are we going to really evaluate someone not effective?
Almost effective.
Yeah. How often does that happen?
Really? Whoa, that's really...
Well, but that's the thing is, they're changing the terminology, so is that middle term...
Right.
So what is the rate of non-effective right now? Would you estimate like a less than 20% of the population, or?
Oh yeah, there's
not very many.
Yeah.
I mean, most districts, I think Monroe fits within this. I mean, we're fairly normal in this. Have a fairly standard distribution where you've got about 80% currently are in the effective band, and you've got a few high flyers, and you've got a few trailing at the end, and that's pretty normal.
So that essentially puts 80% into the effective category.
Today's
at
effective.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Today's
yeah.
effective.
Today's.
That's, you know, next year's effective.
Yeah,
well,
that's.
And that's a little bit of. I said I wish they would have picked names for ease of conversation. I think.
Got an MSBOA ratings. Division
yeah.
One.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Division 3.
Yeah. I think the reason they didn't was exactly
we
the point
well
that's
that
being
that
made
stuff.
Now, though, because there's a little bit of a psychological pressure to say, I don't want to go below effective. Well, all of a sudden, there's pressure to kind of push people towards the highest category now. I think that's probably why it was done the way that it
could
was
be.
Done. I wasn't in that room when they did it, but. I would imagine that was part of the process.
It'd be tough.
So, yeah.
The evaluator is going to be tough.
Yeah. Are we going to document on these things? Because, I mean,
that's what we already do.
Well, I think if you get not effective, I mean, I think you're going to get some.
Well, there's statutory.
We've had teachers that have been not effective or ineffective that have also left our system.
80%. I mean, if we have 80% not effective, which I think is what we're going to have to do, it's got to be some pushback, I would think.
So we don't have that high of a percentage, but we
do have.
Well,
we have to next year.
Well, we have, if we evaluate people right now that they're not effective, they end up, a lot of times the teacher end up making a choice about do they stay in the system.
That's what I'm afraid, are we going to lose 80% of our teachers?
No, it's because it's not 80%. When you said that number, that 80% of your people are effective, then you have this higher effective. So you're really talking about maybe like around that 2 to 3, 5% number there. But the other part is too, if you get minimally effective or that next rating down, it's not the end all be all because your goal is that next year to get back to effective. And so you put very strategic goals inside of there, monitoring inside of there, and mentoring inside there so that, that employee knows what they have to do to become effective. So because not everyone is going to be effective. They're going to have, it could be classroom management, it could be an instructional deficiency, and then you coach them up. And if they get coached up well,
I mean, I understand that, but is there a psychological impact upon the majority of our teachers saying, hey, it looks like I'm not very effective, maybe I should seek some other alternative?
That's the that's the skill that the administrators have when they talk with when teachers end up in that world, is that you've been marked this year, you've got really two choices, come alongside, and we can, because you have to put a plan together to coach them up, or you end up, they end up getting coached out.
Larry, are you talking about the teachers that get labeled, the teachers that would have been labeled highly effective, now they're just being labeled effective in the new system, and now they're demotivated because they feel like they've been lowered a step? Those teachers, are those the teachers that you're referring to?
Those are one of the groups.
Or are you talking about teachers that are going to be rated minimally effective or less than effective or whatever the new term is, we're worried about losing those
needs growth.
And I'm worried about
needs growth.
Groups.
So it's needs growth. It's not
first
thing.
We have to be on that show. That seems like a big
develop things a little more positive.
Like they're being demoted, and maybe it's not, and maybe we got to explain that. But
we'll have the.
If I was an evaluator, I would feel really bad about saying you were effective last year, but now you're.
Yeah.
Not very effective.
Yeah, you're losing recognition of your very brightest and best.
I would think so.
Yeah. But that's where when going to the three levels, there's trainings that are going to have to happen. So we. You remember when the legislature pushes stuff through, sometimes it's not thought out. And so this is a law change, and that's why we just.
Legislators are not insurance agents. They are not experts in any particular field most of the time.
So then our last policy is similar to that of the administrator's evaluation. It's a staff evaluation. And on this one, it gets in there that after July, I know one of the questions that have been before was, on the second page, number three, after July 1st, 2024, the portion of the teacher's evaluation that is not measured using student growth and assessment data or student learning objectives metrics or using the evaluation tool developed or adopted by the district must be based on objective criteria. So they threw the whole kitchen sink in there, which was just what came out of the law.
That's kind of what I was referring to. It's subjective.
Yep. So one of the things.
Objective. Which one's which now? I forget which one. Subjective is.
My personal thoughts.
Okay.
So one of the things that Collins & Blaha is doing for their clients is those the procedural side.
Yep.
That so to help guide us through. Now you have these policies. Here's how you implement them. So that is one of the areas that they're working on.
And that's something that's not we're not doing that uniquely for each client. We're recommending to you here's some best practices, and it's got the whole firm involved. Gary's been leading that, but all of the senior attorneys have been involved, and that'll be coming out within the next week.
Oh.
Yep. Are there any questions on any of these policies? All right. Next on the agenda was the
first vehicle. So I'm trying to get my, oh, it's off. Here we go. So the question was raised, and it has to do with...
do we have access to the contract?
The contract had been supplied. I have to go back and find out what board brief I shared.
Because I looked for it, and then I was like, I didn't see it attached.
I don't think everybody got it.
Okay.
You got it? I don't remember.
I had a special request.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I just like
I'd have to look and see where it went out. So in this contract right here, adjustments to contract and price, and it's on page 9, gets into the changes in size or composition of the fleet. The contract price shall be adjusted to correspond to increases or decreases in the fleet size for each vehicle or equipment classification if such changes are at least 5% on a prorated unit cost. These adjustments shall be made semi-annually based upon the beginning fleet size and classification for the last amended fleet adjustment. We sold 15 school buses that were our spares. And so they were used very frequently during the year. Our fleet at that time was 60 buses, so now it's 45. And so the per unit cost, when we went back and talked with First Vehicle about this, had to do with we went with what was being spent on these buses, which is parts, because the labor never changed. Because these buses were not a daily ran bus. These were buses that they would have to keep them up and going due to keeping a green sticker on them, so for inspection purposes. Why we, over the years, had kept this many extra buses, I don't know. But this last year, we viewed that it was time to sell them. And so when I went back to First Vehicle and we talked through it, we looked at what did the company spend on these buses over the last 3 years, and they gave an, and so what they looked at was then an average cost, and I did supply this to you, of $6,894.68 is what was spent. So that's what they reduced the contract by, because everything else was a status. It was...
You lost me.
Labor was still not changing. We didn't reduce a person because we had 15 less buses.
Well, that's up to them what they want to do with their staff. I mean, that's not up to us. I would assume if they got more buses, they have more staff, but I don't know.
But Larry, these buses were not being ran on a daily basis.
I don't know. And I don't, I would assume.
But I do.
Well, you do, but I don't. If you can show with that, that'd be great. The other thing is that I'm assuming that the older buses will take more maintenance than a newer bus.
But not when they're, if they were being ran on a daily basis, yes.
I don't know.
So what you're saying is, I'm lying to you right now.
If I have a new car, I can run it on a daily basis, and that's probably not going to cost me much for the first few years. That's my thought.
Correct.
If I have an older car, yep. I might not run it very much, but it's probably going to cost me more
and that's
on a daily basis.
And that's why we got rid of these 15 buses, because they were a liability on the district insurance-wise,
sure.
That we were spending, and on average, these last 3 years, $6,800 on parts so we could keep them legal, because that would either be an oil change or that would have been a... whatever is going wrong with them, because they were not being ran that much. So we got rid of them. As far as, so, but on a daily basis, these buses weren't part of the daily workload that First Vehicle has in our school system.
Well, I would assume the new ones are probably not on a part of the daily workload either.
I couldn't,
I'm hoping that they're not.
But it's just general, but you're gonna have general maintenance on, I mean, PMs.
Sure.
And then, yeah.
Well, you might have a headlight go out. You might have the air brake.
But Cindy, in the first few years, what I'm thinking is that first few years, those light bulbs aren't going out.
We really don't have a newer fleet of buses, if you really think about it.
I'm not saying it's new, but I'm saying they're newer than the older ones.
Right.
If you set it, if you let it set it around, it's going to rust.
Is less to maintain than a newer diesel. The newer ones, there's filters, there's all kinds of anti-air pollution stuff on it.
That's certainly true to some extent.
Oh, it's absolutely true.
But that takes a lot of maintenance on the older ones, too.
Well, and the 15 buses, though, that we sold were a real liability to our district. And they were praying that they would make it out after they were purchased, that they would make it out the gate. So
they probably needed more maintenance, is what you're telling me.
We
got them out of the district before they had to have an inspection done on this year.
That's right.
That's what we did.
Right, because you couldn't sell 15 buses if they were on the road daily, because
no.
Then we would be short on buses.
Right.
So did, I guess, did we reduce the amount 15% or the same percentage as the reduction?
So the total reduction was $6,800.
But where'd you come up with that money?
So they took all those 15 buses over the last 3 years and came up with how much did they spend on it 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and this last year, and the average is $6,800.
That's not proportionate to the size of the fleet.
But it's a prorated per unit cost. So you wind up, so percent, at least 5% on a prorated cost. So you wanted to see a 5%?
No. If they have a change in the size greater than 5%, which 15%
right.
is greater than.
Yeah, it's 25% reduction
right.
of fleet
right.
is what we reduced.
So I'm thinking that, hey, if a 25% reduction in the fleet, we should have a 25% reduction in the.
And I would completely agree if those buses were ran on a daily basis and part of the daily workload of the mechanics.
Well, what does that have to do with everything? The contract doesn't say only according to the amount that has been run. I mean, it says pursuant to your fleet size.
But the cost to repair those would have been more had we been driving.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying that. The contract simply says it's to be, if you have a 5% or more reduction, you reduce the contract accordingly.
Has First Vehicle objected to the reduction?
No, they did not.
They probably don't, no.
No, and I mean, I had to.
Okay.
We had
specifically the contract language.
Right, contract language.
We had a bigger conversation about it.
Is the question whether we can push them from greater reductions?
Based on the language.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Based on the fleet reduction in size.
I wasn't involved in this contract, so I'm just reading this as a guy that reads contracts a lot. The couple of things that I would point out, just for reference here, is if we get to 5% on a prorated unit cost basis, we can change the contract price to correspond to increases or decreases. Doesn't say what it will be. And the other part that we have to keep in mind, I mean, I love to come to the table and bargain, but if we're thinking about how hard to push on this contract to try to take more, it's written explicitly, and I have to scroll up. It's written as a flat rate contract. It's not written as a per unit cost. So pick a number, I mean, say $10,000 to make it easy. You know, if every bus costs us $10,000, wherever the case might be, and we sold 15 buses, I would come to them and say it's cut by $150,000. That's $10,000 per bus. But it's explicitly written not that way. So I'd be cautious about pushing too hard on that one because it's written as a flat rate. The trigger is 5%, and then it says we'll adjust based on the prorated unit cost. My read is that there's a lot of room to discuss what prorated unit cost looks like at that point. And so I just wanted to throw that as a contract interpretation matter, as I wouldn't encourage you to go to them demanding the $150,000, whatever the actual, if you just divided the cost by the number, because it's explicitly not written as a per bus cost to do this. It's a package flat rate. And I would anticipate that's because the fleet is not uniform, right? And that's what I think you were talking about now, is you've got a whole spectrum of buses. Some were run, some were not run, some are newer, some are older, et cetera, et cetera. And so it wouldn't make sense for them to cost it for us on a unit basis, which is probably why they asked for a flat rate contract in the first place, to cover that spectrum. So that's, I was just reading the contract here as you pulled it up and pulling it up here. I think what is an appropriate reduction on a prorated unit cost is a fair thing to talk to them about, but I would not come to them and say we would demand a one-for-one kind of reduction, because the contract's explicitly not written to be allocated that way.
No, I mean, it says we have to adjust the semi-annual based upon the beginning fleet
size. If you hit a 5%.
There's no question we have to discuss it with them. But I'm saying that's how I would interpret it.
Yeah. And so
I would say, you know, we should get close to a 25% reduction. That's my personal thoughts. And I think that should be, and I hate to negotiate in public like this, but, you know, it kind of shoots us in the foot. But
then realistically, to ask a company to say, okay, you're going to take a 25% reduction, when they're actually the ones that came to us saying, you know, you need to really get rid of these 15 buses.
I'm not saying that they didn't.
No, they did.
Well, yeah, sure, because I would assume that, hey, that's, these are expensive things, these are rusting on our lot. Every time we're gonna have to have an inspection, if we have an inspection this fall and we don't pass it, guess who's gonna have to fix it?
And that's why I asked for how much have they been spending on those buses in the last 3 years, on those 15?
I don't know if that has anything to do with anything, but.
Because it does, that's the whole point, is that they were spending, on average, each of these last 3 years, $6,800 on those 15 buses, for those 15 buses just to sit there. Doesn't matter the work.
They have numbers on each one of those buses.
Yes, they keep a running, I don't know what the program is that they have out there, they have a fleet management system.
They do have that, that's correct, but they do not have on their division of labor.
No, because it's just part of the flat rate, where these buses, so they're doing as minimal maintenance as they can to keep them legal, because, so they get a green sticker, but they're not being, weren't being run. But to think that you're gonna have a 25% reduction and still maintain the fleet that we have, where they're spending the vast majority of their time daily?
To me, they'd have to spend the vast majority of time daily if they would have had those 50 buses inspected and they got red tagged and they would have had to fix them.
Well, that's what they did all 3 years prior.
Pardon?
Those years prior, they were keeping those buses with a green tag on them. Those buses were not red tagged, those were green.
No, no, that's what I'm saying, but you're saying, and I probably agree, that come this last September, when the state would have come down, they might have red tagged some of those 15 buses. At which point, a substantial amount of their time, labor, materials, would have to go into repairing those buses.
But their goal is actually, when they know that, say, inspector is coming in the door, they're actually doing the work on buses ahead of time. They never wait for the inspector to show up to let them find what's wrong.
And that even points out to the fact that, again, they would have to spend even more time on those 15 buses before the inspector came in.
And that's why, when I said it's back to, I know we're talking about the labor cost.
And material, because.
But that's where the materials come in.
I know I don't get a vote, and I'm not interjecting on that topic, I haven't been watching the fleet. I just wanted to point out, this is all available publicly, so if this is an open question about negotiations with, a lot of this, in terms of strategy and justification, is being put on the record right now. So, I just wanted to point that out.
So, may I ask a question?
Yeah.
When would this contract with First Vehicle, when would that be in front of the board again?
First Vehicle contract is up, sorry, I gotta go top here.
Five-year contract is in.
Yeah, I'll have that date for you here in a moment.
26.
Dated when it's signed, right?
26.
26, July 1st, 26?
Yep, somewhere there.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly the date, but.
So, if that's the case, like Darla was bringing up earlier, unless there's like, unless there's language in here for, like, reasons to reopen the contract.
Which there are.
Okay, so then it sounds like we should read through the contract, because it's in our briefs, right? At some point, it was in our briefs.
If it wasn't, it would be.
They may have.
I don't know.
I requested, Mary, so I have a copy, but I don't know if everybody else does, in all honesty.
Then I'm gonna make a request that the board be provided the copy of the contract that's being presented currently.
Yep.
And that we can review that contract for the things that are mentioned as, like, things that we could reopen for negotiation. And then if this percentage of, I don't know what the term is one of those things that we could reopen the contract, that maybe that's something that we could bring forward for a future consideration.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's bad for everybody to have a contract, because again, yeah, it's, but you have a disadvantage if you don't have that. I don't know, did you?
Piggyback on that.
I don't think so.
I agree with Mary, so that my first question when this topic came up was, I didn't have a contract to look at, so I had no, nothing. So, you know, maybe like you're requesting is, before it comes up, if there is a contract, that we at least can look at it.
Yeah, I gave it out to all of you in a board brief, it will be in this Thursday's, June of 2024.
You know, the other thing that may be helpful is.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So it's up in June.
So it's this June, so it's like perfect timing.
Yeah.
right?
So the other thing we may want to get a copy of is that, I would assume, Andy, that they gave you some rationale of why they think their amount should be X as opposed to...
Yes, and I supplied that in an email to you right after I received that, which was in early September. So it's this document you see right up here.
Maybe we can...
But I'll make sure that's in your packet this week, too.
Write that for everybody so they get the copy of it.
Yep.
Yeah, because I don't, are all 45 buses basically in service right now being used?
No, well, should I say no. There's probably like 5-6 spares, but they still rotate them in.
So maybe when we look at this contract, we treat those a little different than the ones that are constantly in service.
Yeah.
Maybe we can be supplied with that information, too, how many are active.
We just gotta watch that we don't get to a per mile in a contract.
Yeah, and that's not in here.
It's expensive fast.
That's not in here, right?
I'm assuming they're gonna present us with a proposed new contract?
Yeah, Cindy and I actually need to have, we're gonna have some conversations with Patty over the whole thing with First Vehicle and bring back conversation for us to have at a future date here. Okay. The other one was superintendent goals. From our last conversation, I really got to thinking about it that we're halfway through the school year. I totally agree that we should have the strategic plan in place to be able to work off of. To say that you can't evaluate your superintendent without goals is not needed because we have this document right here, which will be updated for you. I've been pretty clear about some of the stuff in here around the graduation rate and some of those numbers, and even on some of the other student data that's in here about what it should have been, like with MSTEP or other documents. But we'll update that for you. But at this time, I would forego board my own personal goals because you have the evaluation tool. We can have this document. I can supply you whatever I've done this year to determine did the system move forward or not. And at that point in time, you'll be able to do that. But there's already my own personal goals that I got personally going. And in a few seconds here, I know we're going to be pushing time. But, our student data from the questions you guys had before, we actually have the data you've been asking for. And so you'll actually be able to see it very clearly through iReady predictability on MSTEP.
I mean, I don't mind that, Andy, but you understand what the goals are so far. Well, I mean, I guess, to be honest, I mean, I kind of want to give you a break because, again, I don't want to hold you. It says you have to have 87% passage rate in math and reading. I don't think we're going to get there before January. So do you want us to score you on those? If that's what you want, we will do that.
Well, you use this document.
We may not have you.
But the difference being is that you're using the document here as a tool to go, did the system get stronger? Did our graduation rates increase? Did our suspension rates increase?
No, it says that's our goal. Did we meet our goal?
Right.
Did we exceed our goal?
But the argument that's been around the board table focuses around the example right here of the results. So 82% proficiency rate in reading and math.
And I don't think we'll get there before June. So do you want us to grade you? If you do, Andy, we will. But that's not fair to you, I don't think, is what I'm saying.
What I was always saying to you, though, is and this is where you guys, I felt like, would like to have lived better, was just living in the world of your MSTEP. Did your MSTEP scores move? Did they get better?
I don't think that's what that says.
Well, but this is what I was hearing. You're looking at a combination.
That's what you're going to ask us to grade you on, and that's fine. If he wants to do that, we will, but
I wouldn't
want to be graded on that.
But then you're going to have, and I completely agree, we'll have a strategic plan developed, and then everything can come right out of there.
And I also agree with that. I mean, we can't have a strategic plan in your goals, all that before June. But.
So I just want to catch up here based on our last conversation in this. This is my little synopsis of what I'm hearing. We as a board, we're going to update the strategic plan. In updating the strategic plan, we were going to relook at those benchmarks, if you've read what they're called, and look to say, is that where we want to stay? In the meantime, we know that's not going to happen. Like, it takes like 6 months to especially something that big. So in the meantime, before that's updated, when your evaluation comes up, you're comfortable being evaluated on that as it is.
I am, because okay. We're seeing information, we're seeing everything moving. We're seeing that these...
That's not on moving, that's on static, straightforward. Now, and I only remember that because I remember sitting out there.
But this is, yeah, that's why I said this is just a... This is just a start for you.
Well, I think that's the point, Andy. It's
fine.
If you want us to do that, we'll do that.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But this isn't, remember too, this isn't end all be all. When you go through the evaluation, there's other components inside in there too.
Right.
And so.
I know, right.
We're never going to make 80%.
But it's not 80% on MSTEP. That's, I think, the key. It's using local data.
I don't know what that says.
It doesn't say MSTEP. It's a combination of local data.
Why don't we read it?
Yeah.
And
I drafted it.
And that's why we have lots of conversation around it. Leah, want to talk about CTE van purchase, please?
I love to talk about CTE. Not Danny Simmerberg. I'm glad I'm not up for that.
So you can't hear anybody when they stand there if they don't have a microphone. I told you, I listened to recording.
Okay.
But it's being recorded. A work session is still being recorded.
Yeah.
Vocally.
It's just not being live streamed.
Yeah.
It is being live streamed.
And you just
not
can't
the work
hear.
Sessions.
Not the work sessions.
So essentially,
it is being recorded.
She has a mic.
A blank screen.
She has a mic.
Is this working?
Yes.
Okay. So tonight you're being asked to vote on the purchase of a new CTE van. So I want to give you just a little synopsis of the why and the how that came to that decision. Way back in September, Andy and I sat down, and I also sat down with Steve when that 61C grant came from the ISD, and they asked us to write that grant. And that grant was going to be for over $310,000. And so we looked at that is a large amount of money that we typically don't get in a year. That's bonus money to spend. So we came up with a priority list of items that we could potentially spend that money on. The items that you voted through last meeting were the two top priority items on that, which were updating the welders and then the electric vehicle purchase. This was the third item on that priority list. We exhausted the 61C funds with the list that you voted on last meeting, but we were also very blessed with an extra 61A amount this year, about $110,000 more than we got last year for added cost funds for CTE programs. And that money comes from a report that we submit at the end of the year based on student enrollment in our programs and how they've progressed through the programs. And then that's additional money that the district is given to help with program improvement for CTE programs. And I would like to see this next priority item be purchased with those funds. And some of the reasons behind that, we have one CTE van that was purchased back in 2016. I believe it has around 60,000 miles on it at this point. So it still should have a lot of life left on it. But it's in high demand. There are times in the year when, it's slow. December, it doesn't get used much. But in the fall and in the spring, there are multiple times where we have to turn CTE teachers away because it's being used by another teacher for another event. We use it to take our student ambassadors back and forth to our elementaries for events. We use it to take students to BPA and HOSA and DECA competitions. We use it to take our instructors to conferences. It's used for many, many things throughout the year, and there's often conflicts. So when we looked at the use of those added cost funds and something that we could spend it on that would have a benefit to all CTE programs and not just one or two programs, another van seemed like a good idea for a purchase. We don't typically have that kind of, it's a big amount. If we have some added cost funds left, we're usually sitting at like maybe there's $10,000 or $15,000 left for the year. What are some small things that each program needs that we can use to spend that money on? With this larger amount, we decided to try it maybe for this because we don't know when it's going to come around again. So the reason you don't have a specific van in your hands to vote on tonight is because the inventory on these transit vans is about non-existent. We can't order one. The ordering timeframe on the 24s, delivery is like 2 years out at this point. Well, we have to have delivery by June 30th for anything that's purchased with our grant funds for this fiscal year. So what I'm asking is for a vote for a cap that I would have to be able to locate us one. Cassie provided me with information that you can help me with the name of what that is, where if you're going to purchase a fleet vehicle or a large piece of equipment through that.
The MyDeal program for the state of Michigan, where they've already bid out with the state statutory requirements and negotiated pricing with certain dealerships that opt to participate in the program.
So I started with that list to see if there were any out there that were already, you know, in the works. And all of them on these transit vans said contact dealers. So I started making some phone calls to our local dealers. And I got the same answer from all of them, that they would have to locate one for us. And at the time they do that, I would need to be able to move on it quickly. It can't wait for another, you know, going in board briefs and board meetings. So I need the permission ahead of time to be able to start the process of working with the dealerships to locate one of these vans and get it on site by the end of June. So I don't have a specific vehicle make and model for you because it will depend on inventory and what we can find. Our current van is an 8-passenger. That's what I would like to stick with again. I think anything larger than that, I don't want to get into a situation where people need a chauffeur's license to drive it, because the beauty of it is our instructors can drive the van. So I want to try to stick with another 8-passenger. That gives the driver plus 7 students to be able to go. And to some of these competitions, this year alone, we would have avoided the contracting out for 3 different the big buses. Yeah, charter buses. Charter buses. And those have gotten more and more expensive. And it's difficult to rely on district transportation because it's only available between usually 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. And most of these events start at 7:38 in the morning and go till 3:34 in the afternoon. So our fleet isn't available for a lot of the things that we need these vans for. So it's just a way to be able to help our students in these programs and our teachers have access to a vehicle to be able to take students to these events during the school day when our transportation is not available and not have to do so much of the charter bus situation moving forward. So that's what I'm here to ask for. What questions do you have for me?
Is this on the agenda? I don't see it.
No,
for tonight.
Up for tonight. You're hearing about it. It'll be on the agenda for 2 weeks now.
Oh, we can't say
oh,
yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. I said it was tonight. That was my mistake.
Okay. I was.
Is there a cap on how much you're looking to spend?
Not necessarily. What I asked for was the high end of everything that I saw when I was just doing a general search in, you know, general search engine, like inventory down in Indiana and Ohio and other places that I could find it, like what the price range was. So that's where I got my cap. But I mean, I have about an $80,000 budget. I'm hoping to find something more in the $65,000 to $70,000 range and not spend the whole thing. But they're high demand. They're not a cheap vehicle. And right now, I think because all of the delivery companies are using these vans and such, you look at Amazon and FedEx and other contractors that are using a lot of the transit vans. I think during COVID, the inventory got low, and it just hasn't recovered quite yet. So they're just hard to find. But to answer your question, my budget out of what we have extra that I haven't spent yet is about an $80,000 cushion. But we're not asking for quite that much.
So my question is, why are we not moving on this tonight? What is the need for
the
delay?
Board of Education, that we bring things in front of you at a work session, then it wouldn't be voted on for 2 weeks.
We'll give you your money.
So I'll be back next. It's okay. I'll be back next time when you vote on that, and we'll have some student trips on the next agenda as well, some overnight trips for BPA and HOSA. So I'll be back next meeting. But
just a curious question, since you're saying that instructors are driving the van so they don't need a CTL, how do you handle the insurance?
The vehicles are insured with our district policy.
Okay.
And as long as, because those vehicles do not require a chauffeur's license, as long as they have a valid driver's license in the state of Michigan, okay, they're all eligible to drive the vehicle.
Okay.
They also have to go through a screening process with our deputies, so they have to submit their driver's license and their insurance information, their personal insurance on top of district, to make sure they're an insured driver that doesn't have points on their record and things. So there's the people driving it are screened, and then it's covered under district insurance policies. And the last van was purchased as part of the fleet, and this one would be also, like, CTE funds will pay for it, but it will be serviced at Fenmore on a regular schedule, just like our other van is. And the district, that way we can make sure that we're on top of insurance and registrations and all of that that goes through the same process that the rest of the trucks and vehicles that the district has purchased go through.
So first vehicle maintains them?
Yes, I believe they're covered under the agreement with First Vehicle.
Yep. How old
but
is
under
it?
Warranty work wouldn't be done by them.
No,
no, if it was a warranty issue, it would go to whatever, you know, company that we end up purchasing. Yeah. I've only really looked at Ford because that's what we currently have and we're happy with it, but I'm not married to buying a Ford.
Like
if
oil change, if it doesn't come with oil changes,
it goes through Fenmore.
Through Fenmore.
Yes, correct.
Does that have a 1-year warranty on them, do you know, or is it a commercial vehicle?
I don't know. I've not read anything.
I think it's going to vary by the dealer that we purchase it from. I would imagine there's at least a 1-year warranty, but I can't be certain without having the terms from a particular vehicle place.
The manufacturer doesn't give a warranty. Is that what you're saying, Cassie?
No, I'm not sure is what I'm saying. There has to be something, but it's going to vary by the manufacturer and the dealership that we purchase it from.
How old is the existing van?
It's a 2016.
And we've had it since 2016?
Yes, we purchased it new in 2016.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you, Leah. So the remaining items, I'm going to be requesting that we have a special meeting on February the 12th. That's that Monday, so remember how we asked to protect that first, second Monday of the month. And on that meeting, there'll be the board norms, student achievement, along with the strategic plan. We have got two vendors coming, companies going to come in to present to the board for us to choose one of those vendor people, companies to use for plan or strategic plan.
So it's not the strategic plan itself. Just
not this.
Who's
going to come in and present on why you should go with their company to create our next strategic plan.
Okay.
Yep. So with that, there's nothing else, sir.
Okay. Well, that concludes our agenda. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Show of hands. All right, let's take a 5-minute recess and be back here by 7:02.